Hey, welcome and thanks for tuning in. I've got a survey up at remarkableresults.biz/survey. It's very short, and I welcome your input. In the survey responses, you say that you like the podcast, and one reply said how much they like the different opinions on the same topic. That means you're always looking for a fresh perspective, and that's why you come here. Hey, welcome to this inaugural new format. You'll hear from shop owner and coach Ryan Clough from Dubworks and Avid Auto Works in Cincinnati. Ryan answers 20 questions within about 30 minutes. Now, that's the new format. This is up close and personal, and I believe it brings value to you as you continue to navigate and grow your business to boundless success. Learn from a peer. Hey, let me know what you think of this format. I've recorded more just like this, so stay tuned right here where the voices, ideas, and insights that are shaping the future of the automotive aftermarket reside. There's only one Remarkable Results Radio podcast, and I know it's aftermarket approved. It's Carm Capriotto, your aftermarket podcast guy, and I want to thank Napa Auto Care and Napa Smart Sign for their continued support. Napa Expo has officially been rescheduled. But I think you know that. It's February 1st through the 4th, 2021. Well, I know this for sure. Las Vegas is going to have blue and gold paint all over it as Team Napa puts on the fabulous event that was planned prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. Napa, they want to thank everyone for understanding the event postponement, and they send well wishes to you and your families. Rest assured, Team Napa, they've got the energy and investment as ever in Napa Expo, and we look forward to hosting you February 2021. Keep in mind this quote from Tony Robbins. If you want to be successful, find someone who has achieved the results you want and copy what they do, and you'll achieve the same results.
I like to think that I would have maybe figured out eventually, you know, the business side of it, but A, I doubt I would have gotten it all, or B, it just would have taken so long.
Hey, more with Ryan Clough in a minute. Now, don't forget to watch the aftermarket's most fun video show. That's aftermarketweekly.com. You can watch it live on Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube every Tuesday, 12 noon Eastern Time. Go to aftermarketweekly.com, aftermarketweekly.com, where you can watch all the archived episodes and watch it live. And don't forget, you get a shop tour. Hey, I hope you enjoy this format as Ryan Clough shares a couple of things, like one new skill he'd like to have, new technology that he recently added, what his dream car is, and one of his biggest mistakes, and a whole lot more. Don't forget, let me know how you like this new format, carm@remarkableresults.biz. Find the key talking points, Ryan Clough's bio, and links to his previous episodes at remarkableresults.biz/E561. Hey, a warm welcome to Ryan Clough. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Carm.
Hey, thanks for all the support you've given the show over the years. You were one of the first people I reached out to when I came up with this crazy idea of 20 questions in 30 minutes. What do you think of that?
I like that you come up with stuff and you've had some different formats, and I always dig it, man. And thanks for thinking of me. I'm excited.
Well, thank you, man. We're stretching. It's all I think about is that we're just stretching what the listener wants to hear. So I've got this really cool stack of cards. I have like 50 cards here in front of me, and I'm just going to take this first one and we'll end up with 20. We'll see how it goes. All right, ready? Number one, would your organization crumble if you stepped aside?
I don't think that it would. At least I hope that it wouldn't. Both my shops are fairly well automated. I have worked, you know, to get people in place to manage and to take care of the day-to-day duties so that I'm a little more in the background doing some marketing, doing some finance. So I mean, you know, if I left for a year, maybe, you know, I might need to think of some long-term plans then. But for the most part, you know, they come in, they're empowered, and it works well, I think, for me and for them.
You're kind of doing what a CEO should be doing.
Yes, I would agree.
Number two, how has your business changed in the last 3 years, Ryan?
You know, we have grown to incorporate more of the brands within the Volkswagen group. It was Volkswagen, then it was Volkswagen and Audi years ago, and then Porsche and, you know, even some Lamborghini, some of the other brands. In the past 3 years, I mean, tech, there's been stuff. I mean, we've, you know, gotten more involved with things like DVI, texting our customers, CRM platforms. I think everybody's kind of figured out that you need a more dynamic management system. It's not going to do it all. So getting ones that play nice with other software, I think having all of these other cool softwares out there integrate with our point of sale to give data. I'm a huge data guy. We live in the data world. So having all these other softwares and they all integrate, like I have these dashboards, I can see what's going on. Having that, because no one management system has it all. So just getting the extras in there has been great over the past few years.
What I heard was tech, data, and the fact that you started a while back put you in pretty good shape when COVID hit.
I do think that shops that were better positioned when COVID started are crushing it right now. And the ones who were struggling before are probably still struggling a little bit.
Thanks, man. Question three, if you could send a message to yourself 10 years ago, what would you tell the younger you?
I would say, good Lord, raise your prices. You need that. Hire the best possible help you can get. Spend some of that on marketing, and you'll have a much easier time and a better balanced business, and maybe even take on some debt. I was very debt averse, and I got there, you know, but it just took a long time. I could have gotten there sooner.
We talk about this all the time on the show. I know we're preaching to thousands of people, and what questions me is, how come they haven't heard you and the other people that say the same thing all the time?
Maybe they've heard it, but it just hasn't resonated. I don't know. Sometimes you have to have an eye-opener to kind of get it. You've heard it, but like you haven't gotten it.
You heard it, but you didn't hear it, and it didn't sink inside, and it didn't become part of your constitution, your soul, and your heart. When you've made those major changes, it was one of those, okay, I absolutely have to do it. It's the only way my businesses are going to survive. You had that attitude, right?
Yeah. There was one point in particular where I know the path diverged for me, and I know where that was. So,
question four, if you could pick up a new skill in an instant, what would it be?
Definitely marketing related video content. Everyone's talking about the direction we're taking with video, and I'm not Gen X, but I'm not millennial. I'm kind of in the middle. So like I'm pretty comfortable with a computer and a little bit, but I video content creation. I mean, I watch the younger generations. It seems to come so easy for them, and like thinking up the idea and then filming all the different angles and editing it and putting it all together. If I could just snap my fingers and have that skill, that would be great.
Well, you need to get a young assistant to follow you around and say, take this video of me doing this, edit it up, and put it up on Instagram in the next 4 minutes. And presto, it'll be done, right?
Yeah, you have someone for me?
No, but I see you're going to write a job description here when we hang up.
No, actually, I think that there is maybe a need. If there was a person in each city that could come and spend a couple hours at a shop on a weekly basis and go to different businesses and be your like video marketing, like here, I'm here to get ideas and help you guys. Cause it doesn't come easy. I think, you know, we have to wear a lot of different hats. So I think that would be a cool job.
I totally agree. It's a hell of a concept or an idea. And I have the same problem. I know that I need to do more video, which is why we're recording this in video, but that's not like me being in front of the camera and doing and saying things. Like when I grow up, I want to be like Greg Buckley. That's what I want to be. Question five, recently fired a customer. And if you did, what was the reason?
Maybe about a month or two ago, we had a newer Audi, like a really nice model, not that many miles. I think it was even a doctor. Everything seemed primed to be correct. And he'd hit a curb, you know, so accident damage. And I mean, I wasn't the advisor, but I know my advisor. I know my advisor explained how it works. It's accident damage. But, you know, when it came down to it, we fixed what was obviously, you know, broken, and he approved that. And we drove the car and there was still some noise. And some advisor said, hey, we took care of the obviously bent, broken stuff. We need to do like a wheel bearing or something else that we couldn't see. He was just not having it. And I mean, I remember being in the shop and hearing the advisor on the phone, and I never hear him like in a heated discussion. Like he wasn't getting heated, but I could tell it was tense. And the short of it was the guy just didn't trust. And I don't know, there was nothing we could really do. And so we just ended up giving his money back and wished him well and said, hey, good luck finding a shop that you trust. I mean, it's an accident. You know what? You know, what can you do? It's can't really see. Every accident's different. So I'm sure some people have been in, you know, a similar spot.
How often does it happen? A couple times a year?
Over the years, you know, I've had different advisors, and some are better at watching what they promise. I think a lot of times the shop does what it does. A lot of times it comes down to what's promised. You know, if you promise it a certain way, you've covered yourself. And if you are running fast and loose, you're still doing the same work, but then you're more likely to get into trouble.
Question six, Ryan, what drives you?
I'm a little bit of an A-type. I have a strong need for efficiency and productivity, and I like problem solving. I don't know, at some point in my life, well, I think I reflected on this, and I went to a Montessori school at a young age, and a longer story, but I think that style of learning, it kind of lets you work at your own pace, and I think that I kind of give that credit for making me the way that I am, for better or for worse.
Well, you're sought out after in the industry. I mean, if anyone wants to have anyone speak about processes and systems, the first name on the list is Ryan Clough. I'm not surprised. That's what drives you to be a problem solver. And if tab A doesn't go into slot B, you want to know why.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be flexible. You can't be too rigid. I hope I don't come across as rigid. But yeah, there's definitely a time and a place to be organized. And when your business grows, all that instinctual based, like gut based stuff, I mean, I still trust my gut and stuff. But man, the bigger you get, the more you have to process it, or it gets out of hand quick.
Next question. Any secrets to time suck? How do we rein it in?
My number one solution to that, and it actually comes up frequently in discussions and stuff like this, I had a need. And so I started out trying to be organized because we just said I'm type A, right? So I had a to-do list. And whenever my to-do list was 10 years ago, and I wrote it on a piece of paper and crossed it out like everyone does. And then I moved to a Word document. And as my business grew, my to-do list got longer and longer, as did my Word document. And eventually, my list wasn't even on one page. It was on two pages and then three. And it became demoralizing. You ever had a list that's so long that you're just like, I don't know what to do, right? Okay. And then obviously another point of being organized is when you use a calendar. Calendars are great. You remember, hey, I'm supposed to call this person back or do this or that. And I realized that I needed to break my to-do list up by day. And I wanted this combination of a to-do list and a calendar. And it just, at least digitally, it doesn't really exist because I have enough tasks that my day, it's never going to go exactly how I planned. It's kind of like dispatch, you know, and I have all these different things. And so I really just came up with a Google Doc that had a spreadsheet in the doc that looks like a calendar, and I can just quickly cut and paste. So my long to-do list now gets broken up into days, and I'm usually 3 to 4 weeks out, and I've taken my list and I've planned everything out, you know, and when it doesn't happen, you just quickly move, and I can hyperlink to email or website, and I have all my appointments on there. And the short of it is I plan my day out. At least I try. You have to at least make an attempt. So that at the end of the day, I look at my next day, I plan it out. I wake up with a little more sense of purpose. And when my day goes sideways, as it does, I just stop and I reassess and I reprioritize and I bump some things out. And that's been the best solution that I have.
We start out with a semi-semblance of discipline in the morning and then accept that things are going to go wrong. But at least you have a base to go back to. You know what the commitments were, and you could move things around. I totally get that. I'm using Microsoft To-Do List. And what's really cool is to be able to check the box and have it go away when I got it done. And the other really cool thing about it is you can set a date, and you can also take that little card and move it around, and you can change your priorities on the fly.
Sounds like a similar thing.
In fact, it's been the longest thing that I've ever actually used in trying to keep my world organized. Hey, it's Carm here with news about the new Napa Smart Sign, previously known as the Digital Menu Board. I like to think of it like a silent salesman on a TV near your service desk. It's an easy way for you to increase customer awareness of your current promotions and educate them about needed repairs and service. In other words, having a Napa Smart Sign will supercharge your sales. Napa Auto Care tests have shown 1 out of 5 consumers ask for a repair or service they've seen on the board. And targeted promotions resulted in double-digit increases. One Auto Care shop owner said, "I've received amazing feedback. Customers are actually asking for additional services they see on the screen." Now that's what I call getting results. You choose the content for your Napa Smart Sign from a library of auto care services and repair topics. The Smart Sign comes with preloaded content. Just about anything you can think of is available, from alternators and alignment to wiper blades and wheel bearings. There are over 150 topics to choose from. Templates can be customized with your location branding for a professional look. Some of the options include customer reviews from Kukui, DemandForce, or MechanicNet, live news, and even the weather. Whatever content you choose, it's preloaded for you. Just as important, it's easy to change your services, prices, and video content anytime you'd like. Plus, the latest Napa national promotions are downloaded to you automatically. Of course, having a Napa smart sign gives your auto care center a professional, state-of-the-art look and feel that tells customers, I'm on top of my game. Now, that builds trust, which means recommendations are accepted more readily and customers spend more. Find out more about what Napa smart sign can do for your business. Talk with your servicing Napa store owner to find out more about the smart sign and all the other reasons to become part of the Napa Auto Care family, the largest network of independent repair shops in the country. Next question. We learn from our mistakes, Ryan. What was one of your biggest mistakes?
This is one of my interview questions. It was a technician. I said, what's one of the biggest mistakes? I'm looking for like a mistake you made on a car, but I didn't specify. He's just thinking, what's the biggest mistake? And he comes out with, well, I did cheat on my wife. I was like, oh, okay, sorry. I meant like work-related. So are you talking about all my life or more like a mistake in the shop car?
You're killing me. Answer the question however you see fit.
Oh, okay. I'm going to stick with the shop then. It's probably cliche, but probably just not charging enough for parts of labor. I mean, it's so important. I see it so much. I was never going to grow. I was never going to have great techs. Just understanding what it means to be value focused and not price focused. And it was funny because I understood value in my own purchases. Like I bought an iPhone, you know, and you can't buy an iPhone and understand value because you can get a phone for half the price. Why on earth would you spend twice as much? Yet I didn't get it in my own business until a light bulb went off later. So I think just being price, understanding the price and value was my biggest error in my business.
That's the talking point right here for this episode. That was so well said. Maybe we can change some lives with what your answer was. Wow. Question 9, how do you manage work-life harmony?
Getting my business like balanced out to where it has a size that allows for me not to do all the jobs. Like if you have that tradesperson's dilemma and you're the business owner doing those tasks, because you know what those tasks are, and you're the advisor in the tech, it's just hard to get away from 6 to 8 hours a week. But there's a time, and I remember my accountant explaining this to me years ago. He's like, there's going to be a day where you're not part of production anymore, and you got to make that leap, because then you won't be, the work you're doing isn't like directly bringing in dollars. And I understand what he means now. So then you're not teching anymore. And then there's a point there where you're not advising anymore. But you have to kind of get over that hump. And once you do, this is a roundabout way. The roundabout way is to grow your business to the point where you're not doing all these jobs. Because if you're stuck there, it's really hard to get out of the 60 to 80 hours a week, you know? But if you have a business that's large enough to accommodate, and I do remember when I hired the last advisor that took me out of that chair, my hours per week dropped to a much more manageable level, and hence my work-life harmony improved greatly and has stayed mostly good since.
It's a great, great answer, by the way, and it begs me to ask a question, and that's not what this whole show's format was, but, you know, me, I just love to ask questions of people when I find out what their answer was. You said I had to hire that second service advisor in order to get me up and off my counter. Is it like $750,000 million? Do you have any ballpark what it would be as the size of a business? Because some people run $1.5 million business and they're still in it thick because they haven't realized they should back off. And I guess, is there a simple little KPI that says, listen, if you're doing $1 million and you're working 60 hours, you're doing something wrong?
Well, I think the KPI is whether or not you can hire another person is your money. I mean, if you got the income, if you're, you know, whatever shop, if you have a $500,000 or a $1.5 million shop and you have $100,000 in net profit a year, then that's, say that's your take home, you know, and you say, well, I don't need $100,000, you know, I could live off of $70,000. Well, there's $30,000. Put a CSR on the counter. And if you're not, whether, $500,000, $1 million, $1.5 million, you know, if you're only at $80,000, but you're not using a parts matrix or you're charging your effective labor's $80 or $90 an hour, you have room there. And that's really what it was for me. I was probably at about $1 million. That's a nice, easy number. Everybody kind of knows where that is. And yeah, I was working my butt off. And I think my net, you know, at that point was low. It was like 50 or something like that. And I did raise my prices, and that allowed me to hire the advisor. And then it allowed me to really spend even more time on the business. I mean, I was probably spending 30 to 40 hours a week advisor plus all the business. So the business wasn't really getting the time that it needed. So it's a win for everyone. That's what you have to understand. It's not about an owner making more money. It's about balancing a bit. The customers get more value, that you can pay the employees more. You have something that's like, can actually like thrive. Like you said, if you walked away, it wouldn't fall apart. And people like that.
Great answer. Thank you very much for that. Question 10, and I think I know the answer to this. Your biggest learning moment?
Working with a coach, for sure. I had the tradesperson's dilemma. I like to think that I would have maybe figured out eventually, you know, the business side of it. But A, I doubt I would have gotten it all. Or B, it just would have taken so long. I think anyone who starts out with the trade, if you start out with the trade like me, and I think the majority of people that I see in auto repair, I mean, maybe 10% start out with a business background. You know, most of them are either tech or family. Family, I think, may be a little different, but especially for the techs out there like me, like, you're just so focused on the way the car works, and some pick it up easier than others. But working with a coach, I call it the mini MBA. Like, there's just so much you don't know, and you don't realize how it benefits everybody. It benefits your customers to have a better run business, and your employees and you.
Question 11, Ryan, how did you decide to become a shop owner that day that you were a tech and you said, I'm opening my own shop?
You know, I don't know if it was a nice, clean, clear-cut moment. It was a hobby. I enjoyed it. I did it. More I did it, more other people inquired about it. I do remember the day that my other job said, you know what? You're never here anymore. You're always working on cars. You're like on call. Why don't you just quit? And like, so there was, I guess there was a point at where my only source of income was me, you know, working on cars. And so, yeah, I guess that was, and there was a need for it. It became obvious that the types of cars that I worked on, and everybody wanted a mechanic they could trust. That was the problem. And it still is the problem. Can't find a mechanic you can trust.
Boy, how true is that? Great answer. How long ago did you update your website?
Probably in the past month or so, just because of all the COVID stuff. We've had to make some adjustments, what we're doing and, you know, how we're handling it.
So is the advice that you need to pay attention to your website and it just can't be out there and be static?
Yes, you should update your website from time to time. Blogs are a nice, easy way to make some changes, or, you know, you've got a new staff member, you got to throw their picture up. Well, there was a time there where I was updating it all the time with new staff. Thankfully, we've got past some turnover, and those are more static.
Good for you. The most recent update to your processes and or systems, I mean, are you a tweaker?
Yes. Your business is like a tire, and if you got like a gash in it, you got to fix that first. And then there's a nail in it that only leaks out, you know, once a week, and you fix that. And then there's like a valve stem that'll leak out, you know, every long, you know what I'm saying? So we're down to the point where it's small tweaks. And I do remember the good one a couple of weeks ago. We're dealing with a little extra volume, like I think some shops are right now, and trying to keep our technicians motivated because these guys are performance pay and it's a game, and, you know, it's tough, you know, and you got to be smart and strong, and you're working the book times and all that. And, you know, we're just wanting them to feel as motivated as they can get. And, you know, sometimes some of them are a little off here and there. And we're asking questions. We're at a meeting and it comes up that emergency drop-offs are stressful. It was a simple thing. Our point of sale system has a little exclamation point that's red. And it was just like stress-inducing. The promise time might have been tomorrow, might have been a week. But like, you know, the technicians got their day and they just happened to see like one or, God forbid, two of these exclamation points. Then they all of a sudden they're like, they just get demotivated. So it's like, that's the point where we're doing these little tiny tweaks to try to psychologically make sure these guys feel like they're winning the game. Like at the end of the day, there's plenty of work. I'm just like, just come in and bang out as much as you can. But like for them, it's more than that. They want to feel like they're getting it done, and they want to feel a little bit loaded, but not too much either, because that's, so that was our tweak, was we removed an exclamation point from an emergency drop-off.
It's all in the detail. That's in the detail. It's the red exclamation mark. I mean, it's a tiny little thing, but a huge thing psychologically. What a great, great answer. Thank you for that. What's your dream car?
As many kids in my generation, I probably had a picture of a Lamborghini Countach on my wall, and or maybe a Ferrari, but somehow the Porsche 959 always intrigued me. It's a very like limited edition, very ahead of its time. It had all this like technology that a lot of other cars in the day don't have. There's actually a shop that, you know, we've worked with a little bit out in California that services these cars. They're very rare. They were hard to bring into the United States. I think famously Bill Gates bought one, and maybe Ralph Lauren. They couldn't even bring these cars in. They were like stuck. But finally, you can bring them in the United States. They're old enough and they're amazing, but they're also like $1 million. So no, I don't own one.
All right. But when you do, would you call me and tell me that you made it? I know you've made it, but never enough probably to buy $1 million car. Wow. But that would be cool someday. Ever had a mentor, Ryan?
Absolutely. I think Cecil Bullard would be the first to mind for being a mentor for me.
What do you do for fun?
Most recently, I'm a newer father. I have an 18-month-old, and he is just full of energy, and he's learning to talk, and it is a fun that I never knew. It's like the circle of life. It's all coming. I've worked hard and I'm a little late bloomer, but here I am playing with my kid every day. And that's a lot of my time, family time. Other than that, I like to bicycle. I will ride my bike to work a few times a week. I might put 50 miles on the bike, which is ironic for some people that I own an auto shop. I ride my bike, and it's that efficiency. I'm getting in my workout, and I'm always also taking care of my transportation to work.
Do you know what I hear when I hear people ride bikes? As you said, I just think of the whole healthy and, you know, just staying active and, you know, getting heart rate going and, you know, flushing things out and, you know, working up a sweat. I think that's a great thing. Question 17, what is the latest book you read and a big takeaway from it?
I finished a book. It was called From Zero to One by Peter Thiel. He is a founder of PayPal. And I don't know, in Cincinnati, I got involved in the startup scene years ago, and I've just become enamored with the startup scene. And I think the reason why is like, I think business used to be static. That's my guess, is you had a business and you were kind of, but the pace changes so much. And now with COVID, I think it's more obvious, but even with technology, and it's like, you really need to stay fresh. So we're not a startup. It's not like we're all, you know, your shop might be a family shop for 50 years, but like the lessons that startups have to learn, because they have to rapidly figure things out. They have to pivot quickly. And I think when you understand how quickly things change, again, this year being a great example, all these startup concepts become fascinating to me. And so in this book, he's really just talking about how you take something from nothing to something. I mean, we're all usually like doing like a little extension of what we already know. He's like, it's a hard question. He tackles, how do you really create something from nothing? And so I just found it to be a fascinating, you know, book and his take. Obviously, he has the experience and the know-how to prove. He's a very accomplished, you know, entrepreneur and, you know, investor. So it's a good book.
PayPal, what a synonymous name to, you can just about use it to buy or pay for anything. He was probably confirming how nimble you are, you know, and that you're a break the box kind of thinker.
Yeah, it was really awesome. I don't know what my one takeaway would be. It's just a good overall book.
Good for you. Thank you. What new technology are you going to be adding to your business in the next 6 months?
We're a little late to it. I feel like text-to-pay, just the particular systems that we're working with, they haven't gotten it out yet, but we're waiting on text to pay. So I guess it should have already been here, and I might have to look for another solution if it doesn't come soon. But with COVID, everyone's looking for as many touchless solutions as possible. And so we're hoping to roll that out.
Excellent. We've done shows on that. That was one of those build the right case study. You know, people that got on this thing really enjoyed having that touchless experience with their customer early on. Question 19, the secret to a good job interview.
You know, I think a lot of people go into an interview and they're looking at the candidate thinking, what can this candidate do for me? I mean, it's important. Obviously, they have to be qualified. I think one thing I found is looking at it from, is this the right fit for them? And I think two things. One, because I just talked to a guy today that made a bad hire, didn't work out after 4 days. I think if you come across with what's in it for the candidate, two things. One, you'll come across as seeming more genuine and interested, and you actually care, like, is this the right fit? And B, you can avoid a bad hire, because there are people that it just isn't the right move. And you have to ask, I think, a couple of specific questions to understand, is this really the right move for you? Like, where are you coming from? Where do you want to be in a few years? Is my position on your path? Are you making more money? Is it more whatever, you know? Or is it, you know, like, I just need a job, or things are crazy, or I think I could do this. And so I have found when I'm more willing to make sure it's the right position for them, I've weeded out some people that I don't. And hopefully the ones that were right are like, oh, that's cool. He wants to make sure that, and I do, it has to be a right fit for them. So just think, focusing more on if it's the right thing for them.
I love the concept. Is it the right move? And you're asking that of the candidate? And are you asking that question of them? And then number two, are you thinking that yourself? Do you feel that it's the right move for them? Is that how you're looking at it?
I mean, I got to make that determination internally.
Based on what he would say?
Yeah, and I had an example. I mean, this is several years ago. I was hiring for a parts manager, and I had a service advisor, and I think it was a little step down in pay and a little bit of a step down in, you know, responsibilities. And for whatever reason, he thought that was the job that he needed. He interviewed flawlessly, and then completely ghosted, I don't know, 2 months later, like literally never heard from the guy again. Don't know what happened. And I just look back and reflect, and I think that his path wasn't moving up. You know what I mean? If he was, he should have gone up to like be a store manager or another, you know, this position was a step down for him. So maybe he just thought he needed a job at the time, and then he found a job he really wanted. That's what I mean. It was a step down.
Don't get me started on ghosting. And I know you could probably speak at that for a long, long time, but you know, what makes people not even want to call you and just disappear?
Well, obviously I felt like I really missed something because I mean, I interviewed this guy and I mean, he interviewed well, and I don't have the answer to that, but obviously I misjudged him.
We have one more question, but I want to thank you. It's so refreshing to hear you talk. I know Dubworks Cincinnati. How many stores now?
There's Dubworks, and then I have an all makes and model store, Avid Auto Works.
Avid Auto Works. You're a coach with Cecil Bullard at the Institute, and so kind for you to come on with this first format of 20 questions in 30 minutes. I loved your answers. I think this was a lot of fun. I think there's a lot of learning here for the audience. Hopefully, my listener enjoyed it. Here's your final question off the stack. Ever make a major pivot in your business? And if yes, what?
Yeah, I did a presentation on this, I think, at Ratchet and Wrench a few years ago. The short answer, because I know wrapping up, would be I started out as a tradesperson and I worked all those hours we talked about. And I worked so many hours, I hurt my back to the point where I can't really work on cars professionally. So my big pivot there was, oh, crap, I've screwed my not only my health, but my work up. How do I still do it? So I hired a partner and, you know, he was going to do the work and I was going to run the desk. Well, actually, that failed too. So I had to pivot out of that partnership and then into a, you know, another business where it was just me and had some employees, and got to the point where I was totally stressed out and didn't have those that pricing, all those other things. And that's when I came across, you know, Cecil and hired a coach, and then again took a huge pivot and, you know, became more of a working on the business as opposed to working in the business. So those are three significant pivots there to where it got me to a point where now I'm kind of a little more stable. And I mean, the tweaks I'm doing now, you know, we're adding or taking away exclamation points. You know, it's not these major, major pivots. Although I would be remiss if I didn't talk about 2020. I mean, who hasn't pivoted with, you know, with COVID? I mean, who hasn't made significant changes to, you know, cleaning the cars and how we market and how we, if we're wearing masks, all that kind of stuff. So we're, I think everyone, I think I read a stat, like something like 90% of small businesses have altered their, how they do business, you're trying to do stuff remotely, trying to, you know, deliver, you know what I mean? Whatever we can do to reduce the interaction with people or make it safe.
Your point is so well taken. If you don't realize that your business pivoted because of COVID, then you have a problem, because you're not going to come out of COVID doing business the way you used to do it. So accept the pivot, learn from it, reinvent your business. Thank you so much, Ryan Clough from Dubworks in Cincinnati. Appreciate you coming on and being my inaugural 20 in 30. Appreciate that.
Sure. You got it, man.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.